1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. The American Embassy in Sudan has been evacuated thanks to a late-night military operation. CBS's Christian Benavides has details.
As deadly clashes continue in Sudan, the White House announced that American diplomats and their families trapped in the North African country were rescued early Sunday by a U.S. military operation. U.S. forces flew Chinook helicopters 800 miles from the small African country of Djibouti to a staging point in Ethiopia and then into Sudan's capital, airlifting about 100 people out of the U.S. embassy.
But thousands of American citizens are still in the country, and there's no plan right now to get them out. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is blasting the U.S. government for denying visas to its reporters. Earlier today, he even suggested Moscow would retaliate if they couldn't cover his upcoming trip to New York. The dispute comes as Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich is held in Russia on espionage charges. Well, President Biden is expected to announce his reelection campaign this week, making him the first octogenarian to seek reelection. And a rematch with former President Trump could be next. Here's CBS's Meg Oliver.
Polls show former President Donald Trump leading in the likely Republican presidential field, despite facing criminal charges in New York and other legal problems. How do Americans feel about a possible rematch? A new survey says more people feel exhaustion over the idea. 23% describe their feelings as hope.
Abortion rights activists are celebrating a reprieve from the Supreme Court, which temporarily blocked a lower court decision banning sales of a popular abortion pill. Former Vice President Mike Pence reacted to the news this morning on Face the Nation.
The cause of restoring the sanctity of life to the center of American law is the calling of our time. The Supreme Court in the Dobbs decision last June gave the American people a new beginning for life.
Arguments in the case are expected to resume next month. Well, it looks like those Bed Bath & Beyond coupons may expire after all because the company has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. It says it plans to start winding down operations, eventually closing its stores. A big fire caused crowds to clear out at Disneyland in California last night.
Disneyland is on fire. Poor dragon didn't make it.
The 45-foot dragon in the park's Fantasmic show burst into flames, and now investigators are trying to figure out why. Disney's not commenting, but no one was hurt. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and maximum success with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Parents, are you tired of helping put your kids' shoes on? They're squirming, watching cartoons, anything but helping. Luckily, it's Skechers to the rescue. Introducing new hands-free Skechers slip-ins. Footwear you can just get your kids to step into and their shoes are on. You don't need to bend over. You don't need to sit on the floor and try to wrangle them on. And they're available in all types of Skechers styles, with and without laces, and most are machine washable. Find Skechers slip-ins for kids or mom and dad at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish shoes are sold.
Every piece of land has a story. The Upshaw's right there is with a John Deere 1 Series tractor they call Penny.
When your project comes up, you have to just jump in and figure out what is it going to take.
From front loader to backhoe, the Upshaw's have the tools to DIY all day long. Run with us on a 1 Series tractor and start telling your story. Get a 1 Series tractor starting at $134 per month at your John Deere dealer today. For additional cost information, please call toll-free 855-633-2315.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. A few flurries possible at times, tonight, otherwise mainly cloudy skies. Lows dip down to about 27, northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance for scattered rain showers. Tomorrow, highs around 48, mainly cloudy. Lows dip down to about 31. Tomorrow night, slight chance for scattered rain showers. A dusting of snow tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 42.
The following program is an in-depth discussion of all things related to suicide. Listener discretion is advised. ¶¶
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut for this April 23rd session, something, something or another. Your host and program director here, James J. Maloff, with my partner in art, our head of production, Seth Habhegger. And we have with us our good friend Rick Humphreys. Rick, his second time on Director's Cut already. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here. And David Strong is with us as well. David, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
I appreciate the time, you guys. Our conversation today is going to be a conversation about suicide. So Connie, kind of our fifth Beatle, the person who's kind of another producer on this show and everything, was reached out to me and said that Rick and her had talked and would like to do a show. They think it'd be a good idea to do a show about suicide. And the first conversations about it were about suicide awareness. And I think that's a great idea. And that is certainly part of what we are doing today. But what I think is really, because Connie brought this to me and was telling me, expressing to me, she has lost people, that Rick has lost people. And she didn't even know that not even a month or two before that, I had lost my cousin, Christine. So just to add to the, not only to let the audience look behind the curtain here a little bit, but how much this affects people. So much to the point of, Connie and I are good friends. We talk all the time and everything, and she didn't even know this. You know, it speaks to how much not only this happens and goes on, but how little we talk, how little we have conversations about it. Most anybody believes in suicide awareness. You're not going to find somebody who's against suicide awareness, but having a conversation about suicide does not happen nearly enough. Where we're talking about it like this, not like this, in a hushed voice. One of the ways to get around this stigma of this is to talk about it loudly. We know we talk about it all the time when it comes to domestic violence. This is a subject we haven't gotten around to in our society enough. Here was an opportunity for us to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'd like to do in part today. I'd also like to talk to experiences about this and to share what you are comfortable with sharing. I don't want this to be invasive. I'm not looking to ask hardball questions or have a difficult conversation necessarily, because I think that's part of what's important with this subject too. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be overly heavy. It doesn't have to be this monumental big thing that, oh, I got to talk about this. That's part of the reason why we don't talk about it as much, is because of this fear of heavy conversation. We can talk about it while also having a relaxed, I don't want to say relaxed, but a comfortable conversation, I believe. Mm-hmm. So thank you guys for the time. Thank you for doing that. I real quickly want to mention, and I will bring this up a number of times throughout the conversation, you can call or text 988. That is a suicide crisis lifeline, 988, or you can chat at 988lifeline.org. The lifeline provides free and confidential support to people in suicidal crisis or emotional distress. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week across the whole U.S. Again, 988 or 988lifeline.org. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and start now that I'm done with my long-winded rambling and introduction. We have 2 minutes left of the show. So you guys got no time to fill whatsoever. Let's introduce you guys. Rick, you have been with us before, but if you wouldn't mind telling us a little about yourself and why you're here today.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart because I've struggled all my life with suicidal depression. And as I began to find a little bit of hope in recovery, I want to make sure that that I offer that hope to other people, and any insight, anything that I think I found along the way that might help somebody, I want to be part of that in the discussion we're having today.
I believe, especially as farther as we go along, there's something that I noticed when I was a kid, and it becomes more and more true. It sometimes it takes the good people, it takes the bad people to make the good things happen. Sometimes you need these other reversal things. There's a lot of times in life where we will hear somebody, but we don't really listen unless they've been through similar things that we've been through. I feel like depression is one of those bigger things. I think that the whole umbrella, anything under the mental health umbrella, is a similar thing like that. And I appreciate that, Rick. Thank you for being here, and thank you for sharing that. David, how about yourself? Well, do you prefer Dave or David, actually? Let me get that out of the way quick.
Usually I go by David. Okay. But whatever okay. rolls off the
know.
Tongue
Good
for
to
you.
Know, man. Good to know.
Thank yeah, you. Yeah, so I'm here today. I was invited by Rick. We work closely together on community mental health initiatives, one of them being around suicide awareness, suicide prevention. I actually lost my brother back in 2012 to suicide, and it was during my college time, and you know, I didn't really know what to do with it at that time. After graduating my master's degree and starting at the Wood County Health Department, I got to really work with community mental health initiatives, and one of them, again, is around suicide prevention. I became a question, persuade, refer trainer, which is suicide prevention training, and be able to go and do out, dole out those trainings to various groups. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, it takes sometimes the bad, that perspective, to go turn it into something good. And that was something that I was really searching for. And there was a catharsis for myself when I was able to take something that was so monumentally bad in my life and be able to do something positive with it. Again, not necessarily benefiting me directly, but being able to benefit others who either may be experiencing it themselves or have a loved one experiencing it.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you, what you shared, condolences, and thank you for that. I appreciate the time, Dave. Mm-hmm. I want to start with, what is suicide? Now, I pretty understandable what the term, what it means and all that. I'm not going to give you the Webster's dictionary definition of it or anything like that, but I do think it's important to understand the difference of suicide and a suicide attempt. And what those are. Dave, would you mind breaking that down for us?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to. So we have different classifications. There's suicidal ideation, which is just thoughts of suicide, self-harm with the intent of killing oneself. There's suicide attempt, which is somebody actually making actions to take their own life, though during an attempt, they may decide that they want to go live, which is actually very common. For individuals who attempt suicide, they get a moment of clarity where they think, I don't want to actually die. This is a huge mistake, and you know, there's got to be a better way to escape this pain. And then there's completed suicide, which is somebody unfortunately ends up taking their own life within their attempt. Whether they want to live or not, the outcome is, you know, final, which is a death due to it.
There are there's terminology, there's phrasing that we want to avoid when talking about this subject. I know that a couple of these, a successful suicide, a failed suicide, this kind of terminology, this is stuff we want to avoid, correct? Or the wording it that specific way, I should say.
I would say I haven't necessarily come across that, though I would say that that's probably better ways to go put it. I would say too, I'm trying to remember the terminology. It was completed suicide or died by suicide, as opposed to the legal terminology of I cannot think of it off the top of my head.
It always happens when you need it. Yeah,
exactly. That's our brain. It's not calling to mind. Yeah, yeah. But yes, it's definitely trying to go change it from being a legal issue into more of a health issue, where, you know, we want to avoid criminalizing it, because again, we want to get away from that stigma that it's not just, you know, hardened criminals or people who are bad who are attempting it. It can happen to anyone. Mm-hmm. And it has been happening to people that you don't expect more frequently, especially because of COVID-19, the isolation that came from that, and really a lot of hopelessness.
Dave, we haven't worked together, just met each other, and we're already got chemistry, because that's where I wanted to go next. Mm-hmm. Who is at risk? Because I believe there are people that are at risk right now that don't even know that they are, let alone people that are already dealing with it.
Yeah, so and risk is kind of that double, you know, there's two different definitions of risk. Mm-hmm. You know, the people who are at risk of suicidal ideation versus the people who are at higher risk of successfully completing suicide, or just completing suicide, as you mentioned, getting rid of the successful. And the people who are at higher risk of, you know, thinking about suicide, having ideation, and ultimately attempting it, are going to be people who are isolated, people who may be self-medicating to go and be able to cope with the pains that they're experiencing, whether it's just perceived pain or actual pain. I know that people who feel that they're a burden to others, mm-hmm. who don't want to, you know, feel like that on whether it's parents, loved ones, their children, they don't want to put that on other people and feel like that they are a waste of time or space.
Yeah.
And so I kind of mentioned very broad categories, and ultimately anyone and everyone can be at risk. There's no specific demographic. No amount of money can keep you safe from suicidal ideation. No amount of education, no amount of friends and social circles can keep you from having suicidal ideation. It's just something that can happen, and something that happens to a lot more people than we expect. Now, people who are at higher risk of completing suicide, it's all about means. You know, if they have a firearm at home, do they have a trigger lock on it? Do they have it locked away in a safe gun cabinet and then a key across the house? You know, that was one of the earliest ideas for suicide prevention was, there's a lot of hunters around here. We don't want to take away guns. That's not the intention. Yeah. But if they have a locked gun case on one side of the house and a key on the other, well, maybe that walk across the house will give them enough time to go really think about it. Because again, people don't want to die. People just want to escape that inescapable pain that they're feeling. And so I would say that those would be the two categories that, and the risk factors that I'd really put out there.
You mentioned that, you know, oftentimes a person in the middle of the act will have that moment of clarity, or that moment of, I want to live. Sometimes that moment happens before, in being in the heart of the moment. Sometimes it's a moment before that, a minute before that, or 5 minutes, but what have you and stuff. So it's really key, the things that you're bringing there. I appreciate that, Dave. Mm-hmm. And before we go to our first break, what are some of the signs of someone at risk?
Yeah, I would say that really anything that seems like, you know, a red flag for the person, whether it's just complete change in mood, attitude, change for children, significant change in interests, friend groups, for just people in general, if they start giving away prized possessions, whether they find extreme interest in religion or disinterest in religion, buying a gun, stockpiling pills, buying rope. I mean, as unfortunate and as scary as all that stuff sounds, you know, those are the things to be looking out for individuals. People are likely to also broadcast their intent within a week of their actual attempt.
I want to get into that a little bit more later and how social media has played into this, but we'll get into that a little bit later. I do want to also note those things are that's great notes there, Dave. I appreciate it. It doesn't take that, though. A person can be a person can be struggling with these things and show no signs. It's not a give all. It's not necessarily like, well, it's the evidence that we need to necessarily know this. Sometimes you don't know what's in another. None of us know what's in another person's heart or head. I think that's important to note, too. Appreciate the notes. Thank you, Dave. And before we go to our first break, I did want to give these stats real quick, as I am up on this information, and I refreshed it, and I just checked it just before we got going here doing this and everything, and it still staggers me just knowing. In Wisconsin, the number of suicides has increased from 588 deaths in 2000 to 918 deaths just in 2017. The suicide rate in Wisconsin was consistently above the national suicide rate. Suicide rates increased among males 36% and among females by 49%, by almost 50% from 2000 to 2017. This is before the pandemic. Dave mentioned that the numbers have only risen since the pandemic. So just to put that out there, get that in people's heads of why this is such an important conversation and how many people that this affects. We'll take our first commercial break. We'll be back with more A Director's Cut. So, have you done sports?
Yes.
What about weather?
Done that.
I've got it. The moon.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to James Help Seth Pick the Next Theme for this week's Seth Faces the Music. It's on Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio, WFHR. The problem is, he's done so many shows already, it's getting tough to find the next group of songs. Don't worry, though. It'll be fine.
Yeah, all right. You got me. I give up.
That's it. The theme for the next Seth Faces the Music will be...
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner? I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Put a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat in silence. We apply what we learn to life, the bills, the job, the family, things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Director's Cut. Appreciate the audience so much on this one. We always do, but especially on this this one, because we're having a conversation about suicide. We have Rick Humphreys with us. We have Dave Strong with us. Seth is here, even though you haven't heard him. I promise he is here. I want to get into a couple of other questions I have, guys. But first, we were talking beforehand about this. I'd like to get a little more in-depth of your guys' connection, how you guys ran into each other, met each other, this work group. And Dave, if you don't mind touching on that.
Sure, definitely. So Rick and I have been connected through various avenues since I started at the Wood County Health Department about 6 years ago. But one of our more recent accomplishments, I would say, has been the inception of the Storyteller Work Group. This is a group of individuals living with a mental illness and or substance use disorder, just figuring out ways to disclose information on their diagnosis, talk about the stigma that they faced, and then also talk about the resilience and recovery journey that they've been on, be this around depression, suicidality, substance use disorder. Really the whole goal of it is to bring people in to start reducing the taboos and stigmas around talking about, you know, these different things that people may not feel uncomfortable about. Also, to allow people to know there are other people out there who are living with similar things as I am. And look at what they're doing. That is amazing. I want to go do that for myself. Whether that's going out there and speaking in front of a crowd, or if it's just maybe talking to somebody like a loved one, a parent, or a spouse about their mental health challenges in a productive way.
If people want to know more about that group, if they want to partake in that group, is there ways for them to do that?
Yeah, definitely. So they can definitely reach out to the Wood County Health Department. I'm trying to remember the phone number off the top of my head, 715-421-8911. Otherwise, and then they can just get connected to me through our receptionist. I think that would probably be one of the best ways. Otherwise, we do have a website and emails to get connected.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Dave. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Rick, did you have anything you wanted to add to that or all? I want to make sure that I'm keeping you in the conversation.
I'm taking it all in.
No. Okay, right on. That's cool.
No, and it's been really a great partnership when I met Dave, and then just being involved in this. And as I get older, I mean, there's maybe a time I won't want to do public speaking as much, but I want to, the whole idea of mentoring and inviting other people to tell their story and having other storytellers that might emerge and with benefit to themselves for being able to tell their story and get over that sense of stigma, and also just the benefit of offering hope to other people that are concerned. And it's not even just the people with mental illness, but it's their family members. It's people that love them. It's people that work with them. It's a very wide ripple from all of that.
It's helping, it's healing, it's hope creating. It's a really cool idea. That's such a great program. That's awesome. I want to dive into the conversation a little bit more in depth. And why do people attempt suicide? It seems like a sort of ridiculous question in some ways, because we understand that this is an action that takes place. We understand why people do this. Immediately, people will bring up depression or bring up sadness or what have you. But I don't think the question itself gets asked, you know, openly like that very often. Mm-hmm. So Dave, somebody asks that question, somebody brings this up to you. How do you answer something like that?
Yeah, definitely. And really, I don't want to simplify it in the sense of trying to right. belittle the problem, but it's just somebody who's experiencing a pain or hardship that they feel is inescapable, and the only option they find out is by ending their own life, unfortunately. They may have tried many different options, whether that's, you know, traditional therapy, pharmaceutical medication. It might be self-medication through substances. It may be risky behaviors. But at the end of the day, nothing seems to work, or it only alleviates the pain for a small period of time. And they want to be cured of it. They want to be free of it.
When it comes to the idea, okay, we've kind of told people red flags. We've kind of told people of what this is, how it can happen, those sort of things. And now we get to the part of it where it's almost the most the impossible part of things, where what should you do if someone tells you they are thinking about suicide? What should you do if you see somebody you know, you loved or care, or even if a stranger, a colleague, whatever, that you are seeing these red flags, you are seeing these signs? Where do you go from there?
Yeah, that's a great question. And when I was first learning about QPR and, you know, suicide prevention after losing my brother, you know, I thought it was impossible. I thought it was just kind of this insurmountable mountain of a problem that, you know, regardless of what you do, nothing's going to change it. But that's the furthest from the truth that it could truly be. Two simple words: hope and support.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you're able to offer hope for a person who feels hopeless, if you say, I see you, I understand that you're in pain that I don't understand, but I want to help you in what ways I can, suddenly it changes the narrative. I'm not invisible anymore. I'm not the only person who is experiencing this, or, you know, that I am alone in this struggle. There are people who love me and support me, people who care enough about me to go and say, your life is worth living. And, you know, I'm going to be here for you. I think then connecting them to, you know, maybe more traditional resources afterwards, after you provide that hope, is the next step. You know, whether that's the suicide hotline, whether that's a local crisis hotline, whether that's taking them to a counselor, or, you know, the hospital, there are a lot of resources to go and help a person. Now, that's not to go and say that this is 100% foolproof. What? You know, my brother died in the middle of the night after drinking lots of alcohol. And, you know, he made the biggest mistake of his life that he probably would have walked away from and backed away from if he could have. But he wasn't in the right mind, mm-hmm. you know, and that's just an unfortunate reality. But a lot of times they are going to be broadcasting this because at the end of the day, they don't want to die. They want help.
Yeah.
And if they find that this is the only way out, and they've exhausted all other resources, and they feel isolated and alone, then that's the unfortunate outcome.
I mentioned my cousin Christine that we lost a couple months ago. Last night, having dinner with my folks, and we were talking about Christine. Christine struggled with addiction and had been doing really well up until toward this end here. My father has struggled with addiction his whole life. He's been doing much better the last 20 years, but my whole life he was in and out of jail. He was struggling with heroin addiction, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
Christine was his goddaughter, and my father felt that, well, she's struggling with addiction. Well, how fortunate for her. Her godfather happens to be one of the Hall of Famers when it comes to addiction. Like, the mm-hmm. man knows it inside and out. Did about everything you can do. Knows it. He's the perfect resource. And he's sitting there last night still. This is months ago. And he's still struggling with this. Like, why didn't she reach out to me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm right here. We could talk about anything. I watched her from the day she was born and everything. I'm the perfect person she could go to. I'm her godfather, for God's mm-hmm. sake. I mean, you mm-hmm. can come to me. Why didn't she come to me?
Right.
He's still struggling with this. And you can do all the right things. You can say everything right. You can, and it can still happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think mm-hmm. it's so good of you to mention that, Dave. I don't think it's easy to say.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy for me to talk about. That's my,
right.
You know, I can't imagine for yourself. I appreciate that. I respect that so much. And I think it's such an important part of this conversation for the people that are still here to understand
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
that it's not in your control. It's not something you can always do something about.
Yeah.
Can I take it in a little more personal direction?
Please.
So, because I came on to be open about some of the struggles I've gone through, So I hit a point. I dealt with all kinds of mental health issues throughout my life, and I hit a point in my 40s where it turned dark, really dark, like in a black hole. And I just, at that point, thought that it was sort of inevitable that I was going to take my life. It's just a matter of, can I cope today? But if tomorrow gets worse, you know, if it gets, it's sort of like I was waiting for a day when it just gets worse, and it's like, okay, I'm going to give myself permission. But the part of the discussion that's hard to have, even with loved ones, is that I felt, and I was in my early 40s, and my life had collapsed, and I had come back to live with my mother and my stepfather, who did not want me there, in their basement, hiding out, couldn't work, couldn't sleep. I had not a single pillar of self-esteem. Mm-hmm. I felt like I'm a worthless human being. I flunked everything. Can't even get a girlfriend. I don't have a job. And so I was giving myself permission to, I'm a total failure. It's not going to get better. What I also thought was that everybody around me values me the way I'm valuing myself. Mm-hmm. So there is no reason to talk to them. They might tell me nice things, but they really are also looking at me the same way I'm looking at myself. And I don't want to have a future where I'm sort of like a pet, like I'm not a real person that could have a life and make choices. I sort of might have money to live on, and I eat and sleep, and that's going to come to a dead end, and I'm just not going to be able to get up one day. Mm-hmm. And so that was where I was at. And I think, how do you tell even a loved one that does care about you, I feel absolutely worthless, and I'm guessing you think the same of me? Though that's where I don't know how to have a discussion. So it's kind of like what we're all focusing on is these things that this person's in this situation. How do they have some kind of connection that's going to move forward and out of that suicidal zone?
Mm-hmm. I think it's been a good conversation. I think it's been great, the things that we've been talking about today. But Dave and I have been talking about this a bit outward looking in. We have that perspective, Rick. We vitally need that as a part of this conversation. But it's one thing to ask for; it's another to deliver. I can't thank you enough for sharing what you always have, what you did in our last episode too. But especially today, thank you, man. I appreciate you, and you are one of the braver people I've ever met. I admire that, and I've met some brave people. I come from an Italian family, so I mean, we got a lot of that. No, I'm joking.
Thanks. I'll put that in the well.
I think you can put that on a resume. Actually, let's keep it going, okay? Because I want to get into the social media part of things. You mentioned before, Dave, about broadcasting this, about telling people of. I think many of us that grew up reading Sylvia Plath or artists like that kind of get an idea of this. If you've read about her life outside of the writing world and things too, you understand that she is sort of one of the people we use as an outlier, or not an outlier, but an example of suicide and people broadcasting suicide, that and everything. But social media has really turned this in another level. It's brought it to a whole different degree. Mm-hmm. How has social media played into this subject?
It's a very good and interesting question that I feel like could have couple radio shows on.
I was going to say, this is part one of this conversation, because yeah, really. I can't imagine how much there is to uncover with this.
I would say that social media is a double-edged sword. It's a great way, just like the internet originally was intended, great way to go connect people. I would say that with social media, you can get connected with people who are aligned with your ideologies that maybe geographically, when you were out in the community, they wouldn't necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so it's really great for feeling support in that way, however that support may be, positive or negative. Additionally, I feel like, the at least in a local context, the idea of suicide and people talking about it is very negative. There's been a lot of instances where people post about an inmate in the Wood County Jail, for example, completing suicide, and the top comments and the most liked comments are good riddance. Yeah. And, that is not helpful, and that's not supporting the family. Right. People who have a loved one in jail, that's not just suddenly they turned a corner and, everything was good up until that day. They may be struggling for a long time, and people don't understand that context of, you know, a person's struggle. So, you know, there's a lot of things that lead up to somebody being incarcerated. It's not just one day, you know, I turn on the switch, I'm bad.
Yeah.
I'd say, too, that we are very quick to just kind of brush away social media messages about broadcasting, especially depending on who the person who's posting it is.
Yeah.
You know, we might be take somebody who's in their 40s talking about suicide more serious than a 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've had suicides as young as 8 within this county. And so we really need to be mindful and take into consideration anything that's being posted. It's better to, you know, look at everything with a critical lens and really assume, okay, if this person's talking about suicide, they're serious about it. Even if they are seeking help, they're seeking help for something. Even if they're not suicidal, they may be depressed. They may be anxious. They may be sad. They need support regardless, because being able to intervene early is can make all the difference.
And if I can piggyback off that a little bit too, agree with everything you said there, and it's all important. I remember being a kid, first moving out here, and somebody making a joke about Jews. It was really hurtful. It was really tense. Mm-hmm. They obviously didn't know I was Jewish. And I just kind of rolled in with it and everything and didn't say or do anything about it and stuff and just let it kind of be. But it stayed with me. Not so much what they said, but the instance. And social media is a great is a big example of this. You may live in a bubble, but your words don't. Your actions don't.
Yeah.
You may say something about that inmate and think that it's just specifically right. You know, I'm being very specific. It's right about this case and only this case.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm reading that and I'm struggling with suicidal thoughts and I see that, that's just one more person that's adding on to the fact of, oh, nobody wants me around.
Right.
See, I was right. It is better for me to do this and everything. You never know who is listening. I talk about this mostly with children,
mm-hmm.
because kids are watching everything we do. They're sponges and stuff. And, you know, how do we expect kids to grow up to want to be politicians, firefighters, policemen, or anything like that if all they ever see is us talking negatively about these people?
Right.
Got to have accountability, but you also got to show, you know, show the good and the bad of these things. Mm-hmm. I think about this subject, maybe bigger than most. There's some other stuff that's pretty big like this, but this one is the one where we've really got to be careful of how we talk about this subject, because you don't know who's listening. You don't know who mm-hmm. is struggling with these things.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, it's probably somebody close to you, and you don't even know. So when you're putting those comments out there, when you're being that keyboard coward, because that is what you are. That mm-hmm. is what you... Anybody writing comments like that about any subject is just a keyboard coward. They never say it to your face. They're not brave enough to do those things or anything. What Rick's doing today is brave. That's cowardly.
Mm-hmm.
People that do those things, I hope that they can just take a second before they hit send and think about who else might be reading this, might be seeing this.
Definitely. And I would say, you know, speaking about youth, a lot of youth, I feel like, use social media for validation, you know, putting stuff out there to, you know, answer the question, am I beautiful? Am I worthwhile?
Yeah.
And if that is not, you know, validated, then suddenly the question becomes, am I worthless? Am I ugly?
I have a quick follow-up question to that, actually, because I had a friend of mine who's transgender and has had some big issues with depression, and she was watching 13 Reasons Why, and it did lead to a suicide attempt on her part. And she later went on social media and explained what had happened to everybody. I'm curious about that. Is have you come across a lot of that where, like, it's not social media, but like
popular media?
Yeah, like pop culture stuff talking about suicide. Have you seen much of that, either like positive or negative effects of that?
I don't know too much about, you know, pop culture and media. I think that it's really how the message is conveyed. You know, I think that there is glorification of suicide and really saying that this is a valid option in some instances. I think in other instances, it's really talking about how, you know, this isn't really, you know, a valid way out, essentially. And I feel like, you know, part of it is, you need to have those in a larger conversation, have more context than just the media. You know, if you see something that is very challenging, have a conversation about it with somebody that you trust. Be able to go and talk about, you know, hurtful or helpful things that were displayed there. There are a lot of stereotypes. I feel like we've gotten away from that for a lot of different demographics, but I think mental health is still something that is lagging behind. They don't know how to really go show somebody with a mental illness without really overdoing it, or just kind of like tagging it on of, hey, this person also struggles with this, but they don't actually have any of the characteristics. Mm-hmm. It's not relatable either way.
Right. And that relatable word, I think, is key to this, that conversation, that response. Great question, Seth. Before we go to our next break, I do have one more question to bring up. And I think it's going to come across a little silly to some, but it is an important one. And all the research I was doing of like commonly asked questions or commonly asked things, this one kept popping up. Can bringing up the subject put the idea in someone's head? I think there's a fear for some people of bringing up suicide. Like, you might think somebody's dealing with this. You see red flags. You see struggles that they're going through and such. But you're afraid to bring it up because you're afraid, oh, well, if I tell them not to look down, they're going to look down. Like, there's that whole thing. Like, is that an actual thing?
From all my research, no. Now, you know, Rick has more of the lived experience, and I'd love to go and hear a little bit for what he has to go say. But, you know, through my training, they really say that that is a common myth. Yeah. Really, the fact is that when you bring up suicide, if you ask somebody who, you know, is struggling, are you feeling suicidal? It really just opens up the door for a conversation for them to go and seek help, rather than just feeling like all doors are closed. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the way that, you know, I was thinking about Rick and talking to his family. You know, I see this as kind of like you're on two opposite sides of a chasm that feels impassable. And when you ask that question, you are leaning a bridge over for them to be able to go walk across. Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, it's their choice to go walk across that. But when you offer that option, suddenly they feel like maybe I can actually talk about this and get the help that I need. Maybe I can be taken seriously because they are the one that are engaging and initiating.
Yeah. Rick, did you have anything to add with that?
I think because when I'm encountering people that may be suicidal, I'm encountering them more as a peer.
Yeah.
So I would approach it a little bit differently. I would just, if I notice that they seem down, unhappy, whatever, there's other signs, I would just sort of make it more of a general question. How are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, you can talk to me. I would just make that invitation in a general way and then let them come and say, yeah, it's really dark if they want to.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Rick. We'll go ahead and take right here our break. We'll be back with more Director's Cut.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Ready to ride?
Just let me get my flip-flops on.
Whoa, Mom and Dad are going for a ride without their protective gear.
Quick, grab the checklist. I'll grab the gear.
Just where do you two think you're going without your safety gear?
Yeah, you know how we feel about riding without your gear.
Well, it's so nice out.
And we're only going for a short ride.
Not before you put all this gear on, you're not.
But...
riding pants?
Okay.
Check.
Motorcycle boots?
Bye-bye, flip-flops.
Check.
Armored jackets?
Nice.
Check.
Riding gloves?
Two pairs.
Check.
Last but not least, full face helmets.
Check.
Now you're ready to ride.
And you look cool.
All the gear, all the time. Zero in Wisconsin. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at zeroinwisconsin.gov.
Be home on time for dinner.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly cloudy tonight with a chance of flurries. Lows dip down to about 27. Northwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Mainly cloudy skies tomorrow. Chance for scattered rain showers. High of 48. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tomorrow night. 31. Partly cloudy skies. A dusting of snow tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 40.
Welcome back to Director's Cut, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. We have Rick Humphreys with us today, Dave Strong from the Wood County Health Department. Thanks again for the conversation, you two. As we're kind of wrapping up here, I wanted to get into a couple of key things. One, how do suicide rates compare among different groups? Especially from the stats that I was seeing, Dave, it seems that men complete suicide more often than women do. Why this is, getting into a little of the gray area of this.
Definitely. So that has been a common phenomenon. So they say that men are more likely to die by suicide, women are more likely to attempt suicide. Mm-hmm. And it really boils down to the means. Men are more likely to use firearms, hanging, more violent means, while women are more likely to try overdosing. Mm-hmm. Now, that gap between men and women is starting to lessen because women are starting to use more lethal means. And so they're dying at higher rates of suicide, as you mentioned earlier during our conversation today. And that's why that has been going up more and more. Now, additionally to means, how isolated are people? People who are more in rural settings are more likely to experience isolation, not have access to community resources, therapy, and care. They may be more likely to use substances to go and cope with it. And it's kind of that don't ask, don't tell mentality too, which we're trying to get away from. But, you know, that's part of the issue. I'd say the last thing about men versus women may be a sense of pride, where men are supposed to be more stoic. They're supposed to be unflappable. And, you know, talking about suicide is weak in a sense. Yeah. You know, we don't want to go and share our feelings, especially vulnerability.
And I think that I think we're getting better about that. We're raising our young boys more and more that it's okay to be human. It's okay to have feelings. It doesn't make you less than or anything like that. But we've got work to do on that subject. We've got a long ways to go. It's a great thing to note, I think. I just have some more stats that I wanted to touch on here. The suicide rate was highest among individuals ages 45 to 54. I think a lot of times when we think of suicide, we often think of it with younger people and that. I think it's also noteworthy that I'm looking at Wisconsin stats, just for the record. The suicide rate for Wisconsinite residents ages 45 to 54 more than doubled from 2000 to 2020. That's staggering. Staggering right there. The suicide rates were highest, as Dave was touching on, in rural communities. They saw the most of this. So keeping that in mind, I think, is important and everything. And the rates among American Indians, Alaskan Natives, and whites has increased. Mm-hmm. This is something that crosses all barriers, race, creed, all barriers when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. Rich, poor, it affects both almost equally. There are very little bit of differences in the stats that I'm seeing between them. They seem to affect people quite above. There was one other thing that I got distracted here because the subject's just a very heavy. I wanted to also mention veterans. You mentioned something I think really important there about men and how we can be our pride, how we let that get in our way or the shame that we can feel of something and all that and stuff. And then, we think we have this idea in our head of, I know what a person that's struggling with suicide is or looks like. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't look anything like the actual image that really is. So many of our veterans, so many of our currently enlisted soldiers are struggling with this. We've talked about about it on our various shows and everything. The rates of our soldiers and our veterans of suicide has almost doubled since the pandemic. That's only a couple of years. That's staggering. And nobody, there's not a single person that deserves to go out this way. Mm-hmm. But of all people that we should be looking out for, I mean, it should be children and our soldiers. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not to say that everybody should be included in this list. I'm not saying anybody shouldn't be. But what the heck are we doing if we're letting this go by on our watch? Because this is all falls on all of us. It isn't like we can point the finger and say, well, this part of society is to blame or that person is. Mm-hmm. This falls on all of us. All of us are held accountable when it comes to these things, because it affects all of us, because we all know somebody that struggled with this or has dealt with this. Yeah. It'd be very easy for me to just sit here and say, I can't believe society does this. I'm a part of society. Mm-hmm. I'm a part of this whole thing. I got to take responsibility for this too. Mm-hmm. We're letting this happen on our watch. I want to get to treatments. I want to get to options and things available for people. Maybe we can bring some of these numbers down and help people out a little bit. Let's get to that, if you don't mind, Dave. What are some treatments? What are some options available?
Yeah, so I would definitely encourage, you know, depending on background, who you're seeking treatment for, you know, there's specific youth resources, there's specific resources for veterans and adults. You know, it's just really contacting the county human services, it's reaching out to the behavioral health units. There are crisis hotlines, too, if you need an immediate for help. Obviously, you know, insurance status is going to maybe dictate where you go or where you don't go. There is also some wonderful community resources out there, non-traditional therapies, peer supports. I actually have a quick write-up from Miss Morgan Potter. She works at the Mid-State Independent Living Choices.
Morgan's great. Yeah, Morgan's
yes. great. And we have two clubhouses here locally. And I'll go read about them. And there's actually one in Portage County in Stevens Point as well. Sorry if this is a little clunky. It's just
a quick write-up.
But Mid-State Independent Living Choices has two recovery centers in Wood County. River City's Clubhouse, which is RCC, located in Wisconsin Rapids. And a Better Way Clubhouse, ABW, located in Marshfield. And one recovery center in Portage County called Rock Point. And that's in Stevens Point. At the recovery centers, peer support is facilitated by an employee with personal lived experience with mental health and or substance use conditions who is living in recovery and who can use their insight to create an environment of acceptance and understanding for those who are living with these struggles and help guide members on their own journeys towards wellness and recovery. In essence, peer support is about building a space of community for those who might otherwise feel alone in their struggles. At RCC and ABW, we work hard to build a foundation of trust and connection with members, and by doing so, we are able to have productive recovery and wellness-oriented conversations and help members feel supported as they navigate their own journey through life as a person with a mental health or substance use condition. Membership is open to any adult in the community who self-identifies as a person with mental health or substance use challenges, and members are allowed to attend the center regardless of their connection to payment sources such as county or MCO funding. No referral from a medical or mental health professional is necessary, and members are allowed to attend as often or as little as is helpful for their recovery and are encouraged to find a schedule that works for their life, balancing employment, family, community connectedness, and wellness activities. The recovery centers practice trauma-informed, consumer-driven services, meaning consumers decide what activities they wish to participate in, what educational opportunities they wish to pursue, what community resources they need help accessing, and what goals and skills they wish to focus on to help gain or maintain their independence in life and their place in the community. We offer a wide variety of skill and knowledge and experience-based groups and encourage members to participate in what feels right for their journey towards wellness and recovery. Some examples of groups available at the centers are independent living skills such as cooking, cleaning, budgeting, and meal planning, social skills such as conflict resolution and self-advocacy, and personal skills such as self-care, coping skills, relaxation, healthy boundaries, and safe relationships, as well as a plethora of other topics guided by our consumers' interests. Thank you again, Morgan, for that wonderful write-up.
Yeah, that was really nice. Thank you for that, Morgan. Appreciate it. As we're wrapping up the conversation, I did want to also touch on the organization NIMH, N-I-M-H. It's a great organization. You can find out more about the work that they do at their website, nimh.nih.gov, nimh.nih.gov. You throw it into your search engine, you'll be able to find it pretty easy. They have a lot of, not only Q&As on there, but a lot of the information that we've been talking about today, and also a great resource for support when it comes to this subject, not just for people struggling with it, but families that are dealing with the issues as well. When and I also call or text 988. It's the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, 988, or you can chat at 988lifeline.org. If somebody's listening to this, somebody's hearing this, and all this that we've shared and everything, we come back to the question, how can I help? What can I help? What can I do? I think you've gotten some answers to that today. And I think that if you are struggling with these feelings, I think that maybe you have gotten some help with that today. I don't want this to seem like we have solved anything, though. This is an issue that isn't going anywhere. And it's more and more, there needs to be more conversations after this one and more conversations after that one. But I think that if there's some things you can take away from this, one of the bigger things is that support and encouragement, they cost nothing, they can mean everything. And it you just don't know how much that can mean sometimes, of letting somebody know, I give a damn about you. I want you in this game. I want you here with us. How important that is. Tell your loved ones. Tell people. Annoy people with it. Quit telling me you love me, all right? I'm sick of hearing it all the time. Get to that level before you get to a level of, you know what? I meant to tell that person I loved them the other day, and I completely forgot to tell them how much I'd appreciate. You know what? I'll tell them the next week. I'll tell them the next time I see him. There is no guarantee there is a next time. Do it now. Share it now. Again, the National Suicide Hotline, 988, Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, 988. You can chat at 988lifeline.org. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for this conversation. Thank you, Seth, Rick, Dave. Appreciate you. And to the best listeners on radio out there, we appreciate you guys listening and being in on this conversation. We'll have another Director's Cut for you soon coming up right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in 1,000 pieces. Just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Look through your children's eyes to see the true magic of a forest. It's a storybook world for them. You look and see a tree. They see the wrinkled face of a wizard with arms outstretched to the sky. They see treasure in pebbles. They see a windy path that could lead to adventure. And they see you, their fearless guide through this fascinating world.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's art supporting artists in their own words. If you talk, they
will hear you. We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy, so we show them how. And we tell them,
with honest conversations.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.